Welcome to the Quack 12 Podcast, the most official, unofficial Oregon Ducks podcast on the web footosphere. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Quack 12 Podcast or visit our website, quack12podcast.com. If you like what you hear, please leave us 5 stars on your listening device. And if you'd like to support the show, please visit the Quack 12 Patreon page, where for a measly $5 a month, you can become an official Quacker and unlock hundreds of hours of Oregon Duck content. On to the show. Quack, quack.
Quack, quack, quack. Everybody, I've been looking forward to this episode, not only because it is part 4 of our 18-part Big Ten roster review series in which we look through every single member of a roster of an opposing fan base, Big Ten edition this season. I'm excited to talk. Well, just be a part of that, especially with my man Hithloday over here. How you doing, Hithloday?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great because I just went over to Addicted to Quack, read your wonderful article over there, and many other articles. Really great stuff over there. I'm excited for this episode, Hith, because, you know, a lot of fan bases talk about, oh, we travel so well. Oh, that's going to be a home game. Oh, we're the nicest group of people, you know, come over and talk to us. But this fan base that we are about to talk about here, Nebraska Cornhuskers, they truly live up to that hype. When we played them, I believe it was we played them a couple times, but in 2017, when they came over to Eugene, I've never really seen a fan base, you know, that wasn't located on the I-5 show up in such droves to Autzen. They were all very nice. I got nothing but positive things to say about Nebraska Cornhusker fans. And I also got nothing but positive reviews to say about, well, both the Common Fan podcast, which listeners, you got to go over there. Go to at Common Fan GBR on Twitter. Give them a follow. Give them 5 stars in Apple Podcasts while you're there, too. This is the Nebraska podcast, especially, you know, boning up on all our new opponents. It's a really good resource to have. And we, speaking of good resources to have, we have TJ Burkle on the show today for the very first time. How's it going, TJ?
Hey, Adam, it's going great. Thanks for having me. And thanks for the kind words about the Common Fan podcast and Husker fans as well. You know, we take that seriously. About, we like it when people say we travel well, and we like it when people say how nice we are. So we work hard to live up to that. I'll share with you guys. So I'm actually born and bred Nebraska boy. I grew up in Lincoln, but I married a Duck. And she graduated from the University of Oregon, I think, in 2007. Anyway, we were at both the Oregon-Nebraska games in 2016 in Lincoln and 2017 in Eugene. And so it kind of worked out. I would have liked Nebraska to have won both games. I think it worked out best for my marriage that they split that home-to-home series. The Huskers won in Lincoln in 2016 in a close game. And then
that's right.
In 2017, we almost came all the way back, but we ended up losing by 7.
Oh, my God. Both those games were ridiculous in their own way. Because I remember in 2016, was that the one where we went for the 2-point conversion 5 times? And I think we got one of them. And
yes,
then we lost by like 3. Dakota.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. You know, Oregon and Royce Freeman went down, I want to say, in the first half, but he was out for the game. So, but I would never concede anything to my wife. You know, Nebraska obviously was the better team that day.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, hey, I'll give it to you. That 2016 season, I'll give it to you gladly. Yeah. Anyways, let's hop right into this roster because I'm interested to hear.
So I have charted the last 3 seasons for Nebraska, although the 21 and 22 were the last 2 years of the Scott Frost era, and really 22, it was only the first 3 games before he got fired.
Right, exactly.
Although, given how stable Nebraska's roster has been over the last 3 and going into 2024, it still has been a useful project because it's like, man, I feel like I've been watching a whole lot of the same guys for all this period of time. So even though it's like since 2023, it's been a brand new coaching staff, it kind of feels like a whole lot of the same players. So that's an interesting contrast. So Matt Rhule first of all, 2022 gets finished off with an interim coach. Matt Rhule comes on board for 2023, brings on entirely new staff with one exception. Scott Frost had brought on for the 2022 season Donovan Raiola, who is the younger brother of Dominic Raiola. Dominic played for Nebraska. Donovan played for Wisconsin.
Yep.
Dominic is the father of Dylan Raiola, the five-star quarterback who, after changing his mind a few times, wound up at Nebraska. So Donovan's his uncle. Donovan Raiola is the offensive line coach at Nebraska, has been since 2022, and is the only guy to survive the coaching change. Otherwise, it's a Matt Rhule totally brought on a new staff. And for 2024, as far as I can tell, there haven't really been any changes. There's a switch over the tight end coach. The tight end coach was Josh Martin, got promoted from analyst to tight end coach in 23, but now has been demoted back to tight end to analyst. Marcus Satterfield, the offensive coordinator, is now going to handle the tight end duties, and he's given up quarterback coaching to Glenn Thomas.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's no coaching changes to the 2024 season. He's just carrying over the 2023 guys. It's just the 2023 guys was completely new, other than Donovan Raiola. Okay. For not much change, that was a lot of talking. Did I get all that right, TJ?
Yes, you did. Yeah. And I think Coach Rhule had hired a guy who was a very successful high school coach in Texas to be the tight ends coach. And I think that was as much about, and Coach Rhule's got connections into Texas, obviously, from when he was at Baylor. But I think that was as much about, you know, the Texas connection and the connection to Texas high schools as anything. That guy, he got like a DUI or something, basically had to leave the staff. And so then they promoted the analyst to the tight ends coach job. But anyway, the changes you talked about were more about bringing in Glenn Thomas and, you know, Satterfield, I think, as, you know, offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, that was maybe a little bit too much. The offense wasn't very good last year for a lot of reasons, but I think they wanted to bring in somebody specifically to work with quarterbacks, especially with Dylan Raiola coming in. So that was really as much about shuffling the decks for sort of, you know, the assistant coach assignments to make room for Glenn Thomas as anything. But yes, you got all of that right. And you know, the Donovan Raiola thing, I don't think it hurt that Dylan's his nephew, but he's also thought of, you know, pretty highly, I think, by both the Frost staff and the Rhule staff. I think he's considered kind of an up and comer in the business and a pretty dang good offensive line coach.
Yeah. We'll talk about the offensive line. We're going to do the position reviews as we go, and we'll talk about the offensive line when we go there, but short version, I don't think super highly of the offensive line, but I don't blame Donovan Raiola for that. I think he's sort of inherited problems.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. You sound like a Husker fan. Anyway, sorry to
interrupt. Oh, really? I mean, part of the really interesting thing about Oregon going to the Big Ten is that I do all of this from scratch, right? Like everything that I learn about these programs, I learn from watching film, and then I talk to our new friends, as you are, TJ, and that, you know, I hear that line all the time, you know, just like, oh, you must be haunting the message boards. And I'm like, no, I very deliberately don't to keep, you know, to sort of keep my head clear, you know,
means like your fan base is on the right track though. If someone with fresh eyes looks at it and it's like, yeah, I'm seeing the same thing.
Yeah. Anyway, you're definitely right about the offense. You know, it ranked 119th in F+ last year. I mean, it had been getting worse. You know, it was like 47th in 2021. It was 70th in 2022, and then, you know, 119th in 2023. It's trends over time, but it's sort of, there's a lot of things that need, I don't really, sort of spoiler alert here, I think this is a multi-year rebuild. I don't think this is a snap your fingers, get a five-star quarterback thing. I mean, obviously the quarterback situation last year was no bueno, and we'll talk about that. I think it goes deeper than that. I think there's offensive line problems. I think there's skill talent problems. And I frankly have some criticism of Marcus Satterfield's play calling, especially on third downs as well. Before we get to the position groups, which we'll go through individually, and we're still on the coaching staff, since Marcus Satterfield is continuing as offensive coordinator, and as you noted, he's sort of giving up the quarterback coaching responsibilities to just sort of focus on the OC stuff. I wanted to take your temperature, TJ. What do you think about Marcus Satterfield as the OC? How do you think it's gone? Where do you think his future is? What do you think?
I will try to be, I'll try to be polite here. I think your assessment is where a lot of, is where a lot of Husker fans were. We spent a lot of time last fall on the podcast talking about the $1.4 million man, Marcus Satterfield, and just how atrocious the offense was. And we repeated the line from Top Gun many times that if, he found himself flying a cargo plane full of rubber dog, out of Hong Kong before the clock struck 12 on New Year's Eve, we'd be fine with that. So the offense was not good last year. I will say this. They missed on their transfer portal quarterback. Jeff Sims just wasn't very good last year.
Yeah.
And he turned the ball over way too much. And then he was injured a couple games in, and then he came back. And I mean, it didn't work, right? So they missed on Jeff Sims. They had a combination of other injuries. One guy who was supposed to be one of their top wide receivers to just decide in August during fall camp, he didn't want to play football anymore.
That was crazy.
So suddenly they were like having to construct an offense from scratch with different pieces than they thought they were going to have, even as late as fall camp. And so Heinrich Harburg started the majority of games, or at least more than anyone else started, as quarterback, really athletic guy. But they found themselves running, like it was almost like we were watching a team from the 90s. They were running the old school option, which I think worked for a few games, and it's hard for teams to prepare for because they don't see it very often, but that wasn't going to be sustainable, and it wasn't sustainable. So the offense wasn't very good. I think here, and I know we'll get into all this, here's a short answer that I would say. I think that Husker fans are very excited for this year because Rhule flipped the defense in year one, and the defense was pretty dang good last year.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the thinking, what we said last fall several times, if the offense could just be average, if we could just be middle of the road on offense, we'd probably have two or three more wins. And so I think the idea is,
I mean, if anything happened differently, Nebraska would have two or three more wins. Exactly. There's been the story of Nebraska for like 5 years, man.
Oh my gosh. Tell me about it.
I mean, if the moon were in a different phase, they'd have two or three more wins.
No doubt. So I think there's some hope that we can get overall better quarterback play. Raiola hasn't been named, but is expected to be the starter. And then they did bring in some pieces that we're excited about. And I won't go down that rabbit hole because I know you want to get into it group by group. But in any event, I think the thought is not that we're going to have a top 25 offense, but if we could have top 50, top 65 offense, that we could flip the script and win 7 or 8 games this year.
I mean, I'm definitely on the same page in terms of there's a lot of things that go into, like, there's no way that any given offense or defense by the same token ranks as lowly as they did without a bunch of different things happening and going wrong. And I mean, I'll chime. You're totally right about the fumbles. And it's not just Jeff Sims. I mean, ball security was a serious problem across the board. In fact, I ran out the numbers. Nebraska's turnover luck was actually perfectly even. They put the ball on the deck 31 times, but only 15 times did the opponent come up with the ball. So 50-50, pretty much, what you expect. It's just putting the ball in the deck 31 times, given that they only played 12 games and ran 739 plays, means that their fumble rate was 4.19%, which is bonkers. Literally more than one in 25 times they ran a play, they would put the ball on the ground. The other team would get it. That's only 2% of the time, which is still a bonkers number, but put the ball on the ground. The next nearest team is Louisiana Lafayette, which is 3.23. So Nebraska is almost a full percentage point higher. Like 3.23 is a terrible number, and Nebraska is a full percentage point higher. Nebraska was like dipping the ball in Crisco before they were handing it out to snap it. I was crazy how often they were fumbling the ball. So, and that's just one of the issues. There are a number of these issues. Fumble luck or putting the ball on the deck, it's not fumble luck is what I'm trying to say. I think there's sort of when you're putting the ball on the deck that often, that's a systemic ball security issue, which probably is going to take, you know, some real fixing. And just like the wide receiver corps is going to take some real fixing, and the offensive line is going to take some real fixing. My question before we get to the position groups is, do you think you can isolate? And if not, I understand, because it's very, you know, offenses are very complex. And the output of it is have so many different factors. But if you think you can, do you think you can isolate Satterfield's play calling from all the other factors and say, I liked his play calling, I didn't like his play calling, it was neither here nor there? What did you think about that in isolation?
Yeah, as I kind of hinted at earlier, I mean, we were not big fans of Marcus Satterfield last fall. Now, we have said going into this year, the offense is going to be revamped, a lot of new tools, or at least, you know, a lot of new faces in different positions. So we are willing to give him another chance.
Is
what we've said, right? But again, and I'll give the whole crew a little bit of grace, given how limited they were when it came to personnel, what they inherited, and then, you know, what happened, like I outlined. But no, I didn't always like the play calling. You know, one example is, you know, we're playing Maryland. We've got 5 wins. So we need one more win to get to a bowl game for the first time in, at that point, it had been 6 years. It's the first time since 2016. Achubba Purdy comes in as another quarterback who hadn't played much, leads a 90 plus yard drive down the field. There's maybe 3 or 4 minutes left in the game. It's first and goal at the 5. It ends up being, you know, I won't get into the whole thing, but it ends up being 3rd and 4 or 5. And in my, you know, at that point, we'd only given up 10 points. It's late in the game. In my opinion, you run the ball there. And then if you don't get it, you kick the field goal, you take a 3-point lead, and you put your excellent defense on the field to win you the game. Instead, you know, we call a corner route that ends up getting picked off. Maryland goes down and kicks a field goal to win the game. And that was just infuriating because we had a brand new quarterback who hadn't played all year, and we had not, we were throwing another example. We're throwing back shoulder throws on like 3rd and 5 in the middle of the field,
which none of the quarterbacks last year could execute.
No, like the personnel had not shown they can execute on any side of that. Right. And so it was just really frustrating. Like, it's like, I know you're trying to do what you want to do. And I know, you know, I don't know. And then other times I'm thinking of the Michigan State game. It felt like we came out and were running the ball well at different periods of the game. And then we'd go away from it. So look, I understand you have to do certain things. I'm not an X's and O's guy, and I understand coordinators have to do certain things to set up other things, but it was just really frustrating to watch. It felt like they made things harder on themselves than they needed to. I think a lot of Husker fans were really frustrated with Satterfield, but again, I think there's a lot more optimism going into this year. You know, we'll see.
Let's talk about the quarterbacks. As you note, they went through 3 different quarterbacks. Sims started out. Harburg wound up playing most of the season. We also saw Purdy play something like 70, you know, attempt something like 70 passes. Their numbers from charting, you know, I calculate out their success rates and their yards per pass attempt adjusted and their explosive play rates. I mean, they're all basically identical. I mean, it didn't really matter, you know, who was in. It was just that Sims couldn't stop turning the ball over. And Harburg was the best runner out of them, which is kind of crazy because Sims was a good runner.
Right.
Purdy took care of the ball the best in that, like, he was like a bit more, I think he had fewer turnover problems. He was a little more conservative with the ball. And so his success rate was higher. Now all of their success rates in the toilet, but like his is like 10 points better. And he has like a little more touch on the ball than Harburg does. That was sort of whenever Harburg would go back to throw the ball, it was just like, he didn't seem to like grasp that, like, you don't have to rocket the ball as hard as you can every single time. Anyway, Sims and Purdy have both transferred out. Harburg remains on the roster. They brought in 2 true freshmen, Dylan Raiola, as we talked about, the 5-star, but also a high 3-star, Daniel Kalen. We saw all 3 of them in the spring game. The spring game appeared to be they told us it was a number 1 offense versus a number 1 defense and a number 2 offense versus a number 2 defense, but I didn't quite believe that. I think it was a little more mixed than that. Anyway, it certainly didn't look like It didn't look to me like there's going to be a serious challenge to Dylan Raiola. Like, he's probably going to be the starter. They're just going to roll with him. It's a spring game, so you don't want to get like too hyped up because there's a million different things that could go pear-shaped. But like, he didn't look like a goober, you know, out there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like a lot of times when phenom recruit quarterbacks go out there, the first time he throws a pass in a spring game, you're like, oh my God, what were you doing? Scouting services. This guy's a two-star, you know, Raiola passed that test. And you know, he's got more tests to pass in the future, but he at least got through that one. So I think he's going to be the starter. They're just going to roll with him.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, it's widely presumed Raiola is going to be the starter. Sort of the insider reports out of spring ball were that he looked the best, and you're right on the spring game. I mean, and the other thing is like a lot of the top, you know, first string defensive guys. We got a lot of older guys on defense, which yeah. I think will be a good thing. And I'm sure we'll get into that. So a lot of those guys didn't play. So, and then it was technically ones versus ones, twos versus twos, but after a few series, then they started swapping too. So Raiola ran with the ones, he ran with the twos, all the quarterbacks mm-hmm. did the same thing. Harburg look improved for what that's worth. I mean, I thought he threw the ball better in the spring game just by the eye test than what we had seen last year. Mm-hmm. But by all accounts, Raiola's your guy. And then, you know, I think Danny Kalen, there's a lot of affection, I think, for Kalen among the fan base, at least, because he's an Omaha kid. He was highly, you know, he had offers from Missouri, Michigan State. I mean, he had SEC and Big Ten offers. He's an Elite 11 quarterback. And he was committed when Raiola decided to go to, you know, when he committed to Georgia. And then he stayed committed when Raiola flipped back to Nebraska. And so, but I think right now, your depth chart is Dylan Raiola number one, Harburg number two, Kalen number three. I mean, one thing we've talked about on our show, guys, is that I think Harburg in particular will play a role this year. I mean, we haven't seen, and I'm not, you know, I hope to God nobody gets injured, but we haven't seen a quarterback get through a full season healthy since I don't know when. Now, sometimes that's a little nicked up and you miss a game or two, and sometimes it's bigger than that. But you have to assume Harburg may take some snaps. He's such an athlete that they may put him at different, you know, last year during the Minnesota game, they lined him up as like an H-back.
Yeah, as an H-back, he took a nice pass from Sims and gained like 17 yards on it.
Yeah, he got a first down. Exactly. So I think we'll see Harburg play a role. And then, you know, hopefully, too, he's such a good kid. I think he'll play a role in mentoring those younger guys. But all signs point to Dylan Raiola. And the other thing we talk about is, you know, Husker fans are known, you know, we're known for winning the offseason, you know, winning the offseason national championship. And, you know, so we try to be careful of what we're putting on this true freshman. I think you have to assume like the overall, it could be better. The quarterback play could be better with Dylan Raiola. We certainly hope it is.
It would be hard to be worse than last year. Like I am assuming it's good. It would be hard to be worse than last year.
No doubt. So I think it'll be better. We hope it'll be better, but you know, you have to assume, I don't care how good he is, you know, Big Ten defenses are arguably the best in the country. You have to assume, hopefully there's more highs than lows, but there will probably be some rough days for him too.
I mean, he's a true freshman. He's going to make true freshman mistakes. It's just the floor that this offense established last year was so low.
Couldn't get much lower. Exactly.
You said two interesting things that I wanted to talk about a little bit before we go on. The first is that you're right about the spring game. Like there were so many dudes who were out and it seemed like less of a like serious spring scrimmage where they were shaking stuff out and much more of a like, hey, I want to hold out a whole lot of guys. And I mean, like there were multiple reps in which the red team defense only had 10 guys on the field. You know, like it didn't really seem like they were taking it seriously. So like I got less information than I normally do from a spring game, and spring games don't normally give me a lot of information. The other thing that should be said about Nebraska that's particularly interesting is that they are carrying like a 95 man roster. It's like, actually, as I counted up, they've got 98 guys quote unquote on scholarship, but I think, well, at this time of year, just about everybody is about within three of the line. I mean, like just about everybody in the country. And you know, some are like three under because they're still looking for porter help, but other schools are like three over. But what you find out about those three is that they're going to like medically retire or something, or they're going to become like student coaches. You know, that they're going to wind up giving up that scholarship by the fall. You don't know who their names are yet, but you know, they're not really on the roster. Nebraska seems to be unique, and like I maintain a roster database for every Big Ten school. There's nobody who's anywhere close to Nebraska at 98. Probably they've got the typical three, but like the other 10, you know, the 13 that they're over are probably, and I read a really interesting interview with Coach Rule about this in the Athletic, in which he's like, yeah, that's deliberate. We're going to use our NIL funds to effectively put 10 guys who are going to be basically like officially walk-ons. They're not getting scholarships, but we're going to be paid through NIL so that we have what is effectively a 95 man roster. And it was interesting because in the same article, they also interviewed like Ole Miss's, you know, director of personnel. And they're like, we are taking the opposite approach. We are, you know, we want to do 85 guys and, you know, we're directing our NIL, you know, funds, which are not infinite. You know, you have to make choices about them towards the top end of the roster. And I thought it was a really interesting contrast that Nebraska is like, we want to be a depth and development type program. We want to have a big roster of a lot of guys. And Ole Miss is like, they're a window program, as Bud Elliott calls them on his podcast, where like they're waiting for the stars to align, you know, once every 4 years, then they make a real push. Like, our roster is really talented. We're going to try to win this whole thing in 1 year. And then they're probably going to fall back for a couple of years. And Nebraska looks like we're going to build these guys up. And that's why I want 95 guys. First of all, let me ask you, TJ, do you think am I understanding that situation correctly? And second of all, assuming that I do, what do you think about that?
Yeah, you've characterized it accurately. It was funny. At some point in spring practice, one of the press conferences, Coach Rule he kind of pointed out that people will stop him on the street and say, you know, ask him about that. And like as if he's not aware of it, you know? So clearly they have a plan.
I mean, it came as a surprise to me when I was filling my roster, but it was like, what is going on? How are they carrying 98 guys? And like I was at, you know, I posted questions, Reddit, and I got people who were like, we're sick of this question. I'm like, I'm sorry. I just found out, you know?
Yeah, no worries. I mean, and you're right. And I think, look, Nebraska is the kind of place that needs to be a developmental program. Even in Tom Osborne was an outstanding developmental coach. And then we got to be really good, and he was able to bring in high-end talent to supplement that as well. But, you know, Rule has done things a certain way where I think we're the FBS program with the fewest amount of entries into the transfer portal post-spring ball. And I think he's really trying to
build spring. I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maryland has fewer.
Okay. He's really trying to build, you know, something that's sustainable and do it somewhat old fashioned, right? Obviously you talk about NIL, that's not old fashioned, but, and I think you have to do that at Nebraska. And the ways that this works, it's worked best in the past is when, you know, you can bring in, you know, Jalen Lloyd's a good example. I'm sure we'll talk about this. He's a speedster out of Omaha. He had, you know, offers from like North Dakota and Texas Tech and, you know, one other lower end school out of high school, but really, really fast, verifiable track speed. And Coach Rule snatched him up right when he got the job. And he had an impact right away last year, had multiple long touchdown catches. And then they've worked with him this offseason to really hone in on those wide receiver skills, the, you know, the ball skills, the route running, that sort of thing. And that's the kind of thing that Nebraska was always really good at, taking athletes and figuring out where they fit. And then, you know, ideally you're supplementing that with, you are getting some 4 stars. Maybe you are getting some 5 stars if this thing ever gets back to where it's really humming. But you have to have the developmental piece at Nebraska. It doesn't work any other way.
So last thing I'll say about this before we move on is that because Big Ten scholarship rules say that once, if a guy comes in on scholarship, you can't take his scholarship away for football reasons. So you can't convert any returning scholarship player into an NIL walk-on. So therefore, the 10 that they're getting extra to make this a 95-man roster, it's all got to be the freshmen who are coming in. So there's probably, if you go look at Nebraska's, like, if you look at their 247 2024 commits page, it's 31 freshmen. Like, one of them's a punter, although I think that punter is supposedly on scholarship, with very few people, as you say, leaving. And that's why, it's probably because, and they're all like mid three stars or so, it's probably more like 21 of them are, you know, a relatively normal amount are on traditional scholarship, and it's the last 10 or so that are the, you know, NIL walk-ons. And so the effect of this observation about, you know, Rule trying to get, you know, to like a 95-man roster, it's the freshman, it's sort of mid three star range. It's not the go get a bunch of extra, you know, blue chips. That's probably not what's happening here. And because Nebraska has such a mature roster, which we're going to finally get to talking about in a second here, I don't expect that this observation really has an effect for 2024, and probably not even really 2025. We're talking about developmental guys. You know, we're talking about guys to keep an eye out for, hey, that's another extra option at linebacker. That's another potential safety. That's another potential like depth piece at tight end, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean? That's something to keep an eye on for 2026, but it's something to be aware of that they're trying to build out the depth for the future. Rather than, I thought, like I said, I thought it was an interesting contrast with Ole Miss, which is like, let's win right now with our NIL money.
Yeah, I think that's right. And, you know, I think Husker fans at least appreciate the way he's building it. And, you know, also with the transfer portal and NIL today, you can go, you know, they went and got, again, I know we'll talk about this, they went and got a couple wide receiver transfers that they hope to be immediate impact guys. So, again, hopefully you're supplementing with some higher end recruits / transfer portal additions every year. But also, you know, one of the things we've struggled with in the recent past has been having that depth on both lines of scrimmage, for instance, which is so important in the Big Ten. And so, yeah, I think your assessment is correct. And I think his record as a builder is pretty strong. So Husker fans are pretty high on Matt Rule and the way he's doing things right now.
All right. Offensive skill talent. Let's start with the running backs. They lose. There was an injury situation last year. It was actually pretty bad. By the third game, they had lost Gabe Irvin and Ramir Johnson. There's two guys named Johnson in the running back room. Yep. Irvin and Ramir Johnson, I thought, were the best looking running backs that Nebraska had. So that was pretty unfortunate. They graded out as the highest per play success rate over the couple of years that I watched. I think Irvin hurt his hip and Ramir Johnson hurt his shoulder. They played three games, missed the rest of the season. Both of those guys come back. So I'm interested to see, but I didn't see him in the spring game. They're still listed on the roster, but I didn't see him in the spring game. So first question I want to ask you is, are we expecting them to be full go in the fall?
We are expecting them to be full go in the fall. I think the question that a lot of Husker fans have, myself included, is to what extent will they be able to have an impact? They both have injury histories. Ramir Johnson's in like sixth year or something. Yeah. He's been around forever.
Yeah, he's a 2019 guy.
Yeah, they've both flashed. They've both looked good at times, but they've had these injury histories. We didn't see them at all in the spring. So the hope is that one or both of those guys can contribute, but it's kind of an unknown at this point.
The two guys who, I mean, obviously the injury situation informed this, but the two guys who wound up with the most carries last year were Emmett Johnson and Anthony Grant. Emmett Johnson returns. Anthony Grant, I think, finally ran out of eligibility. He was like a 2018. He first started in like 2018. I think he originally went to Florida State and then he was a JUCO and then he wound up at Nebraska. So Emmett Johnson returns. They had to play some other guys, Maurice Mazuka or Mazkuza. His brother's coming in as a lineman, which is interesting.
Yep.
But he's like a D2 transfer. He got a carrier too. And then they also played a true freshman, got like a couple of snaps, but enough to preserve his red shirt. That was Quinton Ives. He also comes back. They brought in Oregon's Dante Dowdell. Mm-hmm. who got a bunch of carries in the spring game. He looks as good as ever. I always liked that guy. I wish he'd stuck around at Oregon. So it's a big room, right? They've got five guys on scholarship, both of the Johnsons, Irvin, Ives, who didn't really play last year, and then Dowdell, you know, who was a four-star and a real big back from Oregon. So lots of depth here. But then, as you say, it's interesting because, like, I thought that Irvin and Ramir Johnson were the best looking backs, but then they got the least amount of time and they have this injury history. So, like, sorting out who's going to get the carries here, that's Dowdell, you know, wasn't at Nebraska last year and he was behind a bunch of good backs at Oregon last year. So it's like, oh, I don't know, man. Like, who do you think is going to be the number one back out of this room?
I mean, today I'd have to say Emmett Johnson. I've been a big Emmett Johnson fan. I thought he looked pretty good last year. I thought he looked good in the spring game. I think he's got, you know, the combination of speed and power to maybe be an every down back in the Big Ten. And then Dowdell, as you said, we've been intrigued by Dowdell since we landed him. And then, you know, he looked pretty dang good in the spring game. Yeah, and then Ives, I know the coaching staff is big on Ives. We just haven't seen enough of him. I don't know what the thinking is going into 2024. Is he ready for prime time? Is he going to factor into the offensive plan? I just don't know. But again, it comes back to that question of what can they get from Ramir Johnson and Gabe Irvin? And will those guys be ready by August? Will they, you know, how much can they contribute? Kind of an open question right now. So I think right now I'd say Emmett Johnson's your guy. And, you know, Coach Rhule was interviewed, as you probably saw, for most of the second quarter during the spring game and offered a lot of interesting observations. But he pointed out that Dowdell is only, you know, he's got 3 years left. He's got a red shirt left. I don't think they plan on using that red shirt. But point being, I mean, I think Dowdell is going to factor in for a long time as well in that backfield. So a little bit hard to say right now. I'd say Emmett Johnson. But, yeah, you know, just for depth purposes, if nothing else, you hope that one or both of Ramir Johnson and Gabe Irvin are ready to contribute, you know, when they roll out the ball and are ready to kick things off on August 31st.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I really like the way that Gabe Irvin in particular ran. It was really unfortunate.
We love Gabe Irvin. You just got to stay healthy.
Yeah. I mean, the guy who had the lowest success rate was Anthony Grant, and he's the only guy who, I mean, like, if there was one guy who I'd be like, okay, don't give him the ball, it's Anthony Grant. He's the only guy who left. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, tight ends. Actually, let me get them out of the way. There's three fullbacks, at least as I count them, on the roster. They're all non-scholarship. It's Barrett Liebentritt, who came in from Notre Dame, Landon Turnus, and Trevor Ruth. There was one last year who actually I saw a couple of times, Braden Clover, but he is no longer listed on the roster. I think that they are trying to move away from using the fullback position and are using more like tight end type fullback. So I was seeing like Luke Lindenmeyer get used more and more when they wanted to go to like I formation stuff. Do you think I have that right?
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that there's any fullbacks listed on the roster is going to have Husker fans frothing at the mouth. But yeah, I think your assessment's accurate.
Okay. So tight ends. Well, I'll just list. They lose two guys, although I didn't really see him on the field at all. Jake Applegat transferred out, and Caden Becker, who came in from Wyoming, is just no longer listed on the roster. I'm not sure what happened there. But like I said, I didn't see him. The two guys that I was seeing like basically all the time was Thomas Fedone, who was like a mid four star in the 2021 class, number 24. He was the primary receiving tight end, a real tall dude. And then interesting, Nate Borkircher, who's actually a walk-on, but who earned a scholarship a little while ago. He was primarily being used as a blocker, but is a relatively effective blocker. And then, like I said, Lindenmeyer, I would see him used sort of in a fullback-y kind of way. There was also one other guy on scholarship here, Ismail Smith Flores, who is a true freshman. I saw him on a couple of snaps blocking, you know, when they went to some of their like super heavy sets, but he didn't wind up burning his red shirt. They've taken three scholarship guys, or I don't know, maybe some of them are NIL, but I'm just going to call everybody a scholarship guy until I learn otherwise. Carter Nelson, Ian Flint, and Eric Ingerwerson. I think that's the room. I'm just assuming they're going to use this room the same way that they did last year. Satterfield, even though he now has the tight end remit, my assumption is that he didn't get that because he wants to use tight ends dramatically differently. But instead, we're just going to see Fedone and Burkircher, you know, It'll be Fidone pretty much all the time. And then when they go to 12, it'll be Burkircher, and that's that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Fidone and Burkircher are your two guys for sure. I think, you know, you were right. Fidone was the number one tight end in the 2021 class. His first 2 years, he had some injury issues. Had a pretty decent year last year. I think there's a lot of hope that he can pop a little bit and have a bigger year this year. I think there were times when he was wide open last year and whoever was playing quarterback just didn't get him the ball.
Yeah.
Wow. And so like, I think Fidone will factor into the offense pretty heavily this year. And then the other thing I would say is Carter Nelson, who you mentioned, is from Ainsworth, Nebraska. He's 6'7". He's a phenomenal athlete. Notre Dame wanted him. Credit to Rule for keeping him home. He played in a couple of different senior bowls and looked really good. So I think the question is, how much can he contribute as a true freshman? But
I just think he's underweight right now. I mean, he's currently listed at 225, and I don't think he's on campus yet. Like
he was not on campus for the spring. Yeah. So I do think that's a factor. So Husker fans are really excited about him, but have not seen or heard anything from the coaching staff about, are they going to preserve, you know, are they only going to do four games, or is he going to be ready for primetime right away? So I think your point is spot on, but he's one, I think, as soon as maybe this year, certainly next year, is going to be a big factor into the offense as well.
Well, it's just the thing that I've noticed is that, like, you know, I've already mentioned a couple of them, but it will be true for, you know, pretty much every position that I noticed in 2023 was that, you know, Rule would let the true freshmen get their feet wet just a little bit, but he wasn't burning red shirts. It was the other reason why I went on that whole thing about the big roster and being a depth and development program, is that I expect Rule to be at Nebraska for the long term. And I think that he's deliberately trying to build out like a big roster where he's, unlike a lot of programs who are like, redshirting is for the birds, you're supposed to be good enough to, you know, play here for 3 years and go to the NFL. I don't think Nebraska is going to be like that. I think that it's a program that's like, yeah, we do, you know, want guys to redshirt, and we want guys to be here and be playing in their fifth year. And so unless and until I see otherwise, my assumption is, even for, you know, guys who are really talented on paper like Carter Nelson, my assumption is that they're redshirting and that we're not going to see them until their next year. What do you think about that as a default assumption?
I mean, I think that's certainly where Rule wants to land with a lot of these players. But if guys are good enough, they'll play. I mean, I would just point to two guys on the defensive line, Cam Lenhart and Prince Will Umanmielen, who were both freshman All-Americans last year. So I think if you're showing you can contribute and you're a difference maker, you're going to play. But I agree with you. I think overall your assessment is accurate.
Okay, let's talk about wide receivers.
Sure.
First of all, let me go through the departures. They lost Joshua Fleeks, number 11. He had come in from Baylor. He was used a ton on sweeps. Like, in a weird way, he was like the fourth leading rusher on the team. Although, actually, the fourth leading rusher on the team was Jeff Sims. The first leading rusher on the team was Henrik Harburg. Like, yeah, yep. There's a lot of rushing going on in this team. And like, and I'm filtering out scrambles on design passing plays. But anyway, Fleeks got a lot of sweeps and end arounds, but didn't get a whole lot of receptions. Billy Kemp, on the other hand, did get a whole lot of receptions. He was their leading pass catcher, although, boy, that, you know, the ball was distributed to a whole lot. I mean, they weren't throwing the ball that often. And if they were, it was like a third of the time was going to Billy Kemp. And then it was sort of, you know, some to the tight ends, some to Alex Bullock, some to some running backs. I mean, it just really wasn't a very pass driven offense. But Billy Kemp was the one who was getting like, you know, a third of all targets, and he's out the door. They also lose Marcus Washington and Ty Hahn. Those guys were not getting a whole ton of catches, but they were getting a few. So I figured I'd mention them. I think those are the four departures. Did I miss anybody?
No, that sounds right. I don't have it in front of me, but that sounds right.
The guys that they bring back, Alex Bullock, who of the wide receivers was the second leading receiver, but that's with 15 catches for 221 yards, which should like tell you how little, you know, Nebraska is throwing the ball and also how, you know, effectively. They bring back Jalen Lloyd, which you mentioned is a real speedster. Like, I agree. And he was playing as a true freshman, you know, burned his shirt. They bring back Malachi Coleman, who was a very talented true freshman, but was he was out in the spring game. I think he's got a shoulder problem of some sort.
Yeah, that's right. But he should be ready for fall.
Okay, good. They bring back Jaden Doss, who was a true freshman last year, did preserve his red shirt, but I saw him a little bit. There was a fullback named Janron Bonner, but he was tall, and I didn't understand why they had lined him up as a fullback, but now he's playing wide receiver. I saw him lining up as wide receiver in the spring game. He's a wide receiver now.
Yeah, so Bonner, he came in as a wide receiver, and then last year they made him like an H-back, I don't know, tight end, H-back, fullback, something. And then this year they're saying they want to put him all over the field. So that wide receiver, you know, a little bit of tight end, a little bit of H-back, but, you know, he looked great in the spring game.
Yeah. I mean, he was playing against the bad defense, but yeah.
Hey, don't let that get in the way of reality, you know. Yeah, don't let that get in the way.
I am talking to Husker fans, you know. Exactly. It's been so difficult to get like straight information out of it. You're right. Offseason champs, man. Like even the newspapers won't give me like straight stories. So like, everybody in Nebraska has one team. Lovely. And it ain't UNO. And they bring back, thank goodness, Isaiah Garcia Castanedas. This was so sad. He was a starter in the very first game and tore his ACL against Minnesota.
Yep.
That really sucked. So we got like one catch. But anyway, he should be back. And then rounding it out, Demetrius Bell, who's a true freshman. I didn't see him last year, but he got hurt during the spring game.
That was a huge bummer because I think Bell was with the number one offense, considered to be a starter. And it sounds like there were two knee injuries in the spring game. It sounds like Bell's is the worst one. So I haven't heard a timeline for him, but I'd be surprised if he's back for fall camp or for the first game, which is a huge bummer, obviously.
I'll finish out the room. They've got two transfers here. Jamal Banks from Wake Forest, who got like 59 catches for them last year. And then Isaiah Nayer, who had a long path. He was like originally at Wyoming, and then he transferred to Texas. Texas didn't use him, and now he's in Nebraska. He's like originally like a two-star out of high school. I'm not really sure why Texas was so excited about him and didn't use him. It was weird. Anyway, he's real tall. And I saw him play an X receiver in the spring game. And then there's five true freshmen. I mean, they really went hog wild with the true freshmen in the 2024 cycle. You know, Davon Hall, Ja'Cory Barney, Isaiah McMorris, Keelan Smith, Quinn Clark, two of whom I was seeing play, you know, with the white offense in the spring game, play X and Z, Hall and Barney. It's a very young group. You know, like I said, five true freshmen, and then four guys who came in the 2023 cycle. I think they're sort of like pressed in, you know, sort of the Scott Frost didn't want to recruit, I guess. He certainly didn't want to in Eugene. You know, it's a very young room, and I sort of think that, you know, this has been the challenge for the Matt Rhule era, has been like they got to build out this wide receiver room, and so far they've only had 2 years to do it, and that's why it's like 80% of the dudes in this room were 23 or 24 guys, and I expect they're going to be playing both of these transfers, Banks and Nayer, and otherwise it's going to be Bullock and, I don't know, Bonner, maybe, like, but otherwise, you know, freshmen. You know, Banks, Nayer, Bullock, and freshman is my prognosis. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're right on Banks and Nayer. I think Bullock is going to factor into the offense less this year. I think you're going to see more Jalen Lloyd and Malachi Coleman, assuming Coleman's healthy. They're super high on both of those guys. They both got their feet wet last year. I think they're expecting both to make a jump. And then, yeah, I mean, Demetrius Bell was supposed to be, you know, like I said, a big factor. He got injured. I think they're high on Jaden Doss. But I think, you know, if you, again, in the spring game, for whatever that's worth, Ja'Cory Barney is a true freshman out of Miami. I think he's going to absolutely factor into their plans as well. So, you know, I think it's going to be Jamal Banks, Isaiah Nayer, Coleman Lloyd, Ja'Cory Barney, and then, you know, Janiron Bonner. It's sort of whatever role, wherever they put him on the field, whatever role he's in. and then Jaden Doss and Demetrius Bell, if he can come back healthy. And it's funny because Banks is the one of the two transfers that you heard about all spring ball. He's established himself as a leader. He looks really good. But Nayer was the one who flashed in the spring game a little bit more. But I do think, you know, those guys are both, I think, 6'3"-ish. They're big bodied. I would expect them to both have an impact. And again, from a Husker perspective, given how putrid the offense was last year, if even like, let's say, pick one of the two transfers, one out of Coleman and Lloyd, and say Ja'Cory Barney as a true freshman. If three of those guys can be impact guys plus Thomas Fedoni, that's going to be a massive improvement for the offense, you know, even if not all of these guys pop, you know?
I mean, my guess is that Banks is a guaranteed spot because, like, there's one thing that the wide receiver room lacks, it's experience.
Exactly.
You know, he's the only guy who has, you know, in his career more than 20 catches. Probably got a spot on lockdown just because he's caught some balls before. But I mean, by the same token that I think I know what you mean about Alex Bullock having a diminished role. They were sort of forced into playing him. He's a former walk-on. Yep. He's one of the three guys on this team, as I count it, who earned a scholarship. I think one of them is Burkircher, who I already mentioned. I think the other one is Alex's brother.
Exactly. Yep.
The reason I expect that Alex Bullock was playing so much last year, but it only got 15 catches because they were sort of forced to. The wide receiver core wouldn't much to write home about. But I sort of think by the same token, like they're also going to be forced into playing. They don't have a totally free hand here. It's not like, you know, they've got Georgia's wide receiver room or whatever, where it's like, yeah, we have a bunch of seniors who are all five stars and who've all played a million years of football. And we get to freely pick and choose whoever we think is best here. It's like, nah, man, you know, we got to make some choices here. Or we're forced to make choices among a bunch of freshmen who don't have a lot of experience. And so it's like, I guess we'll find out who is ready to play. Sort of cross your fingers that somebody's going to work out. I mean, they bought a lot of raffle tickets. You know, that's what I like here, is that a lot of times when I'm looking at rosters where coaches are needing to rebuild from a bad situation, is they make bets on certain guys. And then they're like, well, since I'm so good at picking winners, I only need, you know, since I only need four wide receivers, I'm just going to get four guys. And I'm so good at picking winners that those four guys are definitely going to work out. And they're like, and then, you know, of course, the law of averages kicks in and they're screwed. That's not what Matt Rhule did. There's like, what is it, a dozen dudes on scholarship here?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And Bullock will play. He will have a role. I just think he'll be on the field less than he was last year. To your point, you're right. So some of these guys are unknown, so maybe their hand will be forced again. But I expect that some of these other guys will contribute more.
They're going to be young. It's a lot of, I guess we're going to find out, but they got enough guys so that it would be very, some of them are going to work out. You know, the law of averages can work for you if you get enough, you buy enough raffle tickets, some of them will pop, you
yep.
know?
Yep.
So, exactly. And it's not like they were getting, you know, real low talents either. I mean, there are a couple of mid three stars here, but there's some, you know, like Hall, Barney, Bonner, Coleman, like blue chips, you know, low yeah. four stars, you know. Absolutely. So we're not talking about, hey, we got to find diamonds in the rough here either. There's some speed. So I'm not expecting like garbage out of this wide receiver core. I'm expecting that they'll probably hit on a couple of guys. They'll be young, they'll be pretty quick, and that it'll come down to other fact, unless they're really unlucky, which is a possibility, especially at Nebraska. unless they're really unlucky, the wide receiver is probably not going to be the bottleneck. I mean, it may be a limitation because you tend to want a little more experience in your wide receiver core than this, but if they encounter a bottleneck, it's probably not going to be here. It's probably either going to be, you know, the quarterback going through true freshman stuff, or if Satterfield is a bum. Or the third possibility of there being a bottleneck is the offensive line. So let's talk about the offensive line. I don't think this offensive line is very good. And I think they're sort of in a trap because they're returning a whole bunch of seniors and they're probably not going to want to turn them over. They're going to want them to finish out their careers. And I sort of think that's a trap. and an unfortunate one. I think that they're doing the right thing because they have brought in a bunch of very young talent, like between the 23 and 24 cycles. I think they brought in 10 guys, which is why I was saying on the top, I think that Donovan Raiola is A, not to blame, and B, is at least like identified the issue and is, you know, getting some, I mean, got a couple of like really good looking recruits in like Bricks and Taumua. Brought in like Jacob Hood from Georgia, you know, when he first arrived in 2022. I'm not a big fan of Tyler Knack from Utah. I watched too much film on him to think very highly of him. I don't blame Raiola for the issues at offensive line, and I can't necessarily know that he's going to be the solution to them, but I like so far the moves that he's made. But I'm in a position where I can't really say, given the film I've watched on these guys for 3 years now, that I'm expecting a whole lot of changes to the personnel in 2024. And second of all, a whole lot of improvement by these guys in 2024. That's my overview of the offensive line. I thought that they were a real problem, and I think they're going to continue to be. TJ, you want to push back on that?
No, I think that's fair. You know, I think that I grew up in the 90s, guys, when we were winning national championships and pushing everybody around. And I mean, we would run for 500 yards, maybe, okay, not 500. We'd run for 300 plus yards a game or whatever it was. And obviously those were really run heavy teams. But I think it's been an ongoing issue through multiple coaching staffs now that when you need 2 yards, we want to be a team that when you need 2 yards and we know we're going to run it and the other team knows we're going to run it, we still get those 2 yards. And we haven't been that team for a long time. And that's been really frustrating. And I think Husker fans are not stuck in the let's run the option like the old days, although people like to suggest that sometimes. If you want to sling it around, that's fine. If you want to score a lot of points, that's great. But it needs to be grounded in the run game. And I just believe that. And so I agree with you. It's funny because lately I feel like the vibe from the media and the fan base and the podcast scene and just people who pay attention has been that the offensive line showed some improvement last year. Mm. I don't feel like that's how we were talking about it last year, honestly. I think Donovan Raiola is a good coach. You know, I think his first year in 2022 was a total just mess with the coaching staff, and you can't take a lot from that. And you're right, he's brought in some really good recruits. So, I think that, you know, that he's thought of really well as a good fit for what Rhule and Satterfield want to do. But it just remains to be seen. I mean, some of these guys have been, as you noted, it's kind of top heavy. There's a lot of older guys who have played a lot of snaps. And you haven't really seen it improve. And so I think there's a hope maybe being less one-dimensional on offense, you know, naturally helps the line a little bit. You know, I think it's reasonable to hope for some improvement, but I think it's also reasonable to expect, you know, there's going to continue to be some issues there.
Well, in terms of their rush performance, it is actually interesting to hear you characterize it in that way, because I mean, it's from charting. Number one, they're a bit better in run blocking than they are in pass blocking, especially the tackles. The two tackles are, well, they're very poor in pass protection, and they're better at run blocking sort of by default. I mean, anything that they would do better at pass blocking. I'm sure they're better at ballet dancing and singing the aria from Turandot than they are at pass blocking. Like, it's also the case that like Nebraska is not that bad in short yardage rushing situations. They're like 69% in second and short. They're like 83% in third and short. The problem is they're not in those situations very often. Because they're not a very good first and 10, you know, run team. And so they're like, they're consistently behind the chains is the problem. It's like throughout all of 2023, you know, excluding garbage time, they were only in third and short 18 times. In which they were only in third and short 27 times. They only ran the ball 18 times, which is actually an appropriate distribution. It's just you were only in third and short 27 times. Oh my God. You were only in second and short 29 times. Like, holy yeah. crap, man. You know, yeah. like that's you're behind the sticks way too much. You know, that's the you know, that's the real problem. But, you know, when they got close to, you know, when all they needed was a couple, part of it is because they're actually a pretty good quarterback sneak team.
Well, that's what I mean. I think even the rushing numbers weren't that bad. I think we were third in the Big Ten in rushing at the end of the year. But a lot of that had to do with the quarterback run game, which yeah. they're moving away from, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of, I guess that's a good point. For my article, I'll tease out the difference between runs that were earned by the offensive line earning those short yardage conversions, you know, because it's like handing it to the running back and pounding it versus the quarterback doing something. I mean, I already exclude scrambles from designed run plays, but I'm willing to bet that it's probably the case that even of those short yardage situations, it's stuff like quarterback sneaks or like, you know, zone read keeps, you know, that sort of thing where it's really not even a credit to the offensive line. I should probably tease that. Okay. So let's talk about the offensive line in themselves. Let me see if I can do the recitation. There were some injuries and substitutions. So Turner Corcoran was at left tackle. He had been starting in that position for quite a while. He was like a high four-star. He was like one of the more coveted gut dudes. He got hurt in week 7 against Northwestern, and I saw Teddy Prochaska for the rest of the season at left tackle. Ethan Piper was playing left guard. He also got hurt in week 7 against Northwestern. And so Justin Evans took over for the rest of the year. What was interesting was that throughout the year, I would see Evans periodically throughout the rest of the year sort of cycle in. And also he would be like the sixth man who would come in for their like jumbo sets. Ben Scott, the transfer from Arizona State, played center. Nurdin Nwelle played right guard. I think he managed to go through the end of the year. And then he signed a UDFA contract with the Saints. Bryce Benhart has been the right tackle forever. He was also a four-star. And then one other guy that I saw sort of on a rotational basis was Henry Lutowski at right guard. And then like at one point I saw Joey Mancino, who I think was a walk-on starting at left guard. I didn't really understand what that was about. And then that's it. Did I miss anybody?
No, that sounds right.
Like I said, Nwelle is off to the Saints and Piper has run out of eligibility. But other than that, everybody else returns. Corcoran and Benhart at the tackle spots. Although I think that's a double-edged sword because, man, I mean, would it surprise you to know that if charted every Big Ten team, these are the pair of returning tackles in the Big Ten that have the lowest pass protection grades?
No, it wouldn't.
Do you think there's, I'll finish who's returning. So Corcoran and Benhart are returning. Prochaska is returning the backup left tackle. Piper, the starting left guard, is not returning, but the backup Evans is returning. And I guess so is Mancino. Ben Scott, the center, returns. He's the guy who grades out the best on my tally sheet. Because of course he does. He's a Pac-12 offensive lineman. Everybody knows the best linemen come from the Pac-12. And Lutowski, the backup right guard, also returns. They brought in one transfer here who I actually think is a pretty good chance of joining the lineup. That's Micah Mazkua. He originally signed with Baylor, so that's probably the connection with Matt Rhule. I think he originally was a Matt Rhule guy, but had transferred to Florida and is now coming to Nebraska. He started at right guard for Gators like almost all of last year. I think they're probably going to plug him in. First question, do you think that's right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they brought him into play, right?
Yeah, I think they did too. I'm not wild about transfer-based offensive linemen, but I think you can get away with one. And frankly, with this line, I think anything's worth a try. I also think, what do you think, is there a possibility? I know Turner Corcoran was out of the spring game because he was recovering from foot surgery. They were playing Prochaska at left tackle. I have seen some speculation that he might take over as full-time left tackle and move Corcoran inside to guard.
I think that's the ideal scenario, right? I mean, Ben Scott is your starting center. Ben Hart's going to be your starting right tackle. Mazkua probably, as you noted, is your probably starting right guard. But Prochaska started some games in, I think 2022, right? I mean, 6'9", over 300 pounds, he's a big guy. Then he's had some injury issues, so he didn't play as much last year. But I think in an ideal scenario, Corcoran slides over to guard. Prochaska is your starting left tackle. And then you probably see Henry Litovsky rotated in regularly. Justin Evans Jenkins rotated in regularly. And then I'm also curious to see, there's, you know, Coach Rule has brought in 11 offensive line, as you mentioned, you know, Donovan Riley's brought in 11 offensive linemen in his first two recruiting classes. I think it'd be pretty rare, just generally speaking, to see a true freshman offensive lineman get much playing time. But I'm kind of interested to see if any of these redshirt freshmen can get some playing time as well. Or is there somebody else? Is there a walk-on or somebody else? Or Jacob Hood, the transfer from Georgia? Any of these guys?
I mean, I would pull the trigger on Jacob Hood. Like, yeah. I mean, I saw him play with the white team in the spring game, and I thought he looked better than Ben Hart, because I think, you know, Adam might look better than Ben Hart, frankly.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, and Adam, if you have any eligibility left, we can connect after this. But
well, I've played zero years of college football, okay, so I imagine, yeah.
But yeah, before. We'll see. But I think, you know, I think you're clear. You know, they brought in Ben Scott for last year. They brought in Miskua this year. Offensive line is just one of those things. Like, you can fix your wide receiver room by adding a guy or two sometimes, depending on, you know, I'm just speaking generally here. You can't really do that with an offensive line room. Like, it's just, if it's there, it's there. If it's not, it's not. So I think they're going to try.
TJ, it's like we've been talking for years, man. Like, I say this every podcast I'm on. Yes.
You know? Yeah, exactly. So I just think we'll see. I think they're going to, you know, you got to move some guys around. You got to try anything to get this thing in a better place, you know?
But I mean, I think a lot of guys here are probably on their last year of eligibility, and I think they're just going to let these guys cycle out. And, you know, the other thing that I notice in terms of roster management is that it does not appear to me that this coaching staff is very aggressive about, you know, nudging guys out the door, for better or worse. And I think that it really appears to me what the thinking is here for this offensive line is they're going to let these guys finish it out. And they're probably not going to make radical changes, even if radical changes would, for the purposes of the 2024 season in isolation, you know, might eke you out a win or two more, that they'd rather just finish the race with these guys and then transition in the 23-24 recruits with a clean start for 2025. That's sort of my reading of the tea leaves of what's going on here, rather than making like radical changes to the line for 2024. Even though maybe if I were running the line, I would probably make radical changes.
I think that's generally accurate. But I do think if, say, you know, you get to midseason and somebody's really flashing, a second team guy or something is really, or coming on strong, a redshirt freshman, or it really, you know, takes a turn after the first few weeks of practice or something, I think that they won't hesitate. I mean, again, it's a balance, right? But they've got to get to a bowl game this year. And so I think they won't hesitate to, and I don't think it'll be wholesale. I don't think it will be dramatic. I don't think it'll be trying wild and crazy things. But if it's like this, you know, Corcoran struggling and this guy looks really good in practice, I think they'll pull the trigger on it, right? So it's a little bit of a balance. But I think generally what you said makes sense and is accurate.
All right, let's switch over and talk about the defense.
Sounds good.
This unit, on the other hand, has been very interesting to watch because, you know, what an amazing, I mean, hey, Scott Frost in 2021, say what you will about the guy, it was the 21st ranked defense in F+, you know, in 2021. Then in 2022, it's the 68th ranked defense. Now Scott Frost gets fired 3 games in. I don't know. Maybe him getting fired had something to do with that. Maybe it doesn't. I sort of think it had, you know, that was inevitable. It had to do with certain dudes leaving. Actually, I should pause and ask you that question. What do you think about that?
They actually got better after he got fired. The defense was atrocious. They couldn't stop Georgia Southern, which was the nail in his coffin when we lost that game 45-42. So they actually got better after he got fired. And they still weren't very good. But also, I mean, it was, I think, an indictment on the Frost era is that 2021 defense in a weird way, because they were so good, but it was this kind of culmination of some guys having an extra COVID year and all deciding to come back.
Yeah.
And sort of the stars aligning for that defense to be really good. And it was his only good defense in his entire tenure. That's just not sustainable, you know, especially when the offense wasn't nearly as good as it was supposed to be. And that's kind of always been his calling card as a coach. So you're spot on. But it, you know, I think it was pretty clear that defense, when they took a step back in 2022, it's like, you can't just have a good defense every 5 years and think that's going to work, you know?
The thing that was really cool about the 2023 defense is it's all the pass defense. The rush defense improves, and it's very good on first and 10. Their rush defense success rate is like 60% in first and 10. And so they're, you know, they're not allowing their opponents into short yard situations very often. They're actually not that great in short yard situations, but their opponents aren't in short yard situations very often. So it hardly matters. What's great is there's a great pass defense, and it's a great pass defense regardless of the down and distance, which we just talked about Penn State, which is the opposite. It's all about their pass rush, and their secondary sucks. And you can tell that from the down and distance, in which down and distances in which their pass rush can't be active, their pass defense numbers collapse because their secondary sucks. Not true for Nebraska. It's the opposite. Their pass defense numbers are consistent, like 60% or so on every single down and distance scenario. And then on third and long, it jumps to 69%, which is actually a little below elite. It's kind of interesting. But it really indicates it's the secondary, and actually less so about the pass rush. So let's start out talking about the defensive line. What's really interesting to me, so Tony White comes in, converts it to a 3-3-5. It's an even surface 3-3-5. So they've got two big guys in the middle, a big defensive end who's playing with his fist down, and an outside linebacker. And then how the edges work is weird. Well, it's weird because the roster kind of lies about them. So that's why I need your help sorting it out. It's not difficult to figure out who the big guys in the middle are, because I really was only seeing two, which is Nash Hutmacher and Ty Robinson, right?
Yep.
Observation number one about them is I was really only seeing those guys. Like, I think there's other guys who can step in and play their spots. And so like I identified them as defensive tackles as well. Let me list who I think those guys are: Elijah Judy, Riley Van Poppel, Sewell Lefotu, and Vincent Carroll Jackson, I think would be guys. I know the last two were, or last three were true freshmen last year, but they're just so big. That's what I'm figuring. Is there in line to become the next Hutmacher and Robinson? And then Judy, I was definitely just seeing him sometimes come in and play.
You're definitely right on Judy. Some of those younger guys, I guess I don't know for sure, and they talk about it some, you know, sometimes being a little bit of a positionless defense. But I think your assessment is correct. I think Hutmacher and Robinson are going to be two of the best defensive linemen in the conference this year. I mean, everyone's really excited about them. So and so you'll see them a lot again this year. But I do think you're going to start. I think we'll know more this year as you start seeing some of these younger guys get more playing time.
I definitely agree that they're very good. My concern is fatigue, and it's actually documentable. They just played, the lack of rotation here is an issue, and you can document it with fourth down. Their fourth down success rate goes down, or I'm sorry, not fourth down, fourth quarter, because they're getting tired because they can't be rotated out. And I was sort of, that's what I'm really curious about, and why I listed those guys who were true freshmen last year. Is like, I think it would be really healthy to see if Nebraska can work in some younger guys into the rotation, give those guys a break. It's actually in my opinion, the number one thing defensively I'm looking for this team is to see if they can give Hutmacher and Robinson a break, because it would alleviate, not like this defense had a lot of problems, but that was the number one problem. And if they could alleviate it, boy, they'd really be cooking with gas. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So they do not officially delineate this position, but there it is clear, because it is a 3-3-5 structure, that they have both a fist down defensive end on one side and they have a Jack OLB on the other side. However, they lie on the roster about who is who. So here are the guys who I think are the actual fist down defensive ends: Cameron Lenhart, AJ Rollins, and, even though he's listed as a linebacker, Prince Will Umanlane. Who's the brother of like the all the other Umen Lanes, like the Florida guy and so forth. He's listed as a linebacker, but he never takes his fist out of the dirt. So I classify him as a defensive end. Those were the three primary guys that I was seeing. Plus, I was also seeing Blaze Gunnarsson sometimes, but he has left the program. Yep. Do I have that right?
Yeah, again, I think so. I think that's right. They list a lot of these guys as linebackers. So like you said, it's a little hard to tell. And I don't chart this stuff like you do. But I think especially with Lenhart and Newman Mielen, I think that's right.
I also saw that a guy named Brody Tagaloa, who came in the 2022 cycle, then missed all of 2023 with an injury. I think that guy is a fist down defensive end. But like I said, I didn't get to see him in 2023. Do you think he's going to be able to join the rotation?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the coaches are high on him, but you know, I think it remains to be seen.
Okay. I mean, I hope he's healthy. It really sucks, you know, miss a whole year. On the Jack side, this is really where their bread gets buttered in the structure of a 3-3-5 defense, as Oregon fans will know because they've been playing that since 2017. Under different defensive coordinators, Oregon's been playing a structure like this for a long time. The Jack will be where the pass rush comes from, and been no exception for Nebraska. So Jamari Butler, MJ Sherman, who came in from Georgia, and then who produced a ton of havoc plays, right? Very good. And then also the interesting one was Chief Borders, who I thought was an up and comer. He was, you know, came in from Florida. I thought that he flashed a bit last year and had a good spring game, and then transferred out after the spring game, so I was confused about that.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise,
but still, it's a lot of dude on the edges, right? You know, Umen Lane, Lenhart, Rollins, a couple of JUCOs, James Williams and Kai Wallen, potentially Tagaloa, and then of course Butler and Sherman, and then there's a freshman that they brought in here, Willis McGahee, and then on the DN side, Keanu Wilhite and Ashton Murphy. I'm not sure if those guys are going to play because, you know, I think they're pretty deep and pretty experienced here. My point is, I don't really think they're losing, you know, other than Borders and Gunnarsson, who are sort of rotational guys, and they lost like Rukan Buckley, who might have contributed a little bit. So like he had moved
to the offensive line. So
yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they moved him to the offensive line and then he transferred out, which like, yeah, I probably would too. You know, they lost maybe a couple of depth pieces, but like they bring back all the major contributors on the defensive, the guys who play in the line of scrimmage. And so I'm not expecting like a fall off at all. I'm expecting, if anything, incremental improvement. On the other hand, they didn't really like add anybody either, right? There's no portal additions. There's three freshmen, and I'm not really expecting the freshmen to play.
I think you do. I think there's a lot of optimism about the defensive line. It's probably going to anchor the defense for all the reasons that you said. And so, yeah, I think your assessment is correct. I mean, I know we'll jump into it here in a minute. I think my biggest concern of the three levels of the defense is at linebacker, where we lost two longtime contributors.
Well, that's totally where I'm going. Yeah, they lose at linebacker. They lose Luke Reimer and Nick Heinrich. They also lose a couple of guys who were, well, I didn't see him that much, but you know, they did play 12 games. I think maybe special teams, Garrett Snodgrass and Grant Taggi. They also lost a bunch of depth pieces. That's in some ways maybe is kind of a concern because they were, you know, fairly highly rated. Randolph Pye, who is a 4-star in the 2021 class, and Kane Williams, who I think they were really expecting a lot out of, who came in from Alabama. He just doesn't appear on the roster. I don't even know what happened there. It's not like he ran out of eligibility. So yeah, I mean, it's a bunch of departures. Now they played a pretty healthy rotation here, right? So like Javon Wright and John Bullock both return. John Bullock is, you know, one of the walk-ons who earned a scholarship. And then they also played Makai Meyer, but that's it. And they brought in a transfer, Stephon Thompson from Syracuse. So they'll have four guys with a good deal of experience here, but they lost their two starters.
Yeah.
What do you think of the room?
Like you said, Bullock was a solid contributor. Javon Wright, I think, was second on the team in tackles. He's a great athlete. Mekhi Bear played quite a bit last year. He was pretty good. Stephon Thompson, I think he was at Syracuse when Tony White was there. That would make sense, right? Mm-hmm. So like, yeah. He knows the scheme and is expected to be kind of a plug and play guy. He was a really important addition. But it's just Reimer in particular, and Nick Henrich too. Both Nebraska boys, which Husker fans love. They were just kind of stalwarts in the middle of that defense going back to the Frost era. Always had a lot of tackles. Always really steady. And those are just tough losses. And they're really high on Vincent Shavers, who you mentioned is a true freshman, and Willis McGahee IV, also a true freshman. Maverick Noonan, I think he's more of like an edge guy, though. He's listed as a linebacker. But sorry, I'm looking at the scholarship distribution chart here.
Do you think Noonan's an edge guy? Because the rest of the guys in the room are guys that I didn't see last year.
Noonan was hurt last year, but I think they think of him as more of like an edge guy. MJ Sherman is also listed as a linebacker. So
yeah, I know. That's why I say that it's good to talk to you, man, because, you know, the roster for guys that I wasn't able to see on film, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. What about Rodgers? That's another guy who's listed as a linebacker, but I didn't see last year.
We haven't seen a lot from him. I didn't see his name a lot in spring ball. I wouldn't expect him to be a big contributor as of right now. So I think to your point, I think the concern becomes, you know, like Snodgrass is a great example. He's from Nebraska. You know, he may have started at a few games in there over the years with injuries or something, but mostly a depth guy, but a solid contributor. You know, I don't see who that is this year, right? I mean, you're going to put a lot on Bullock and Wright and Bayer and Thompson. And so I hope they can shore up some depth between now and you know, maybe it's some walk-ons, maybe it's some guys, some young guys. I don't know who it is, but they're going to have to find some more depth at the linebacker spot.
I mean, this isn't a situation like wide receiver where it's a bunch of dudes who haven't played a lot of football. That's not true, because Wright and Bullock and Bayer and Thompson have played fairly extensively. So like having four guys for two or three spots, plus two guys in Dylan Rogers and Gage Stenger who haven't played football, but like, hey, they're on scholarship, I think. Six guys, four of whom who played extensively last year, that's appropriate. In my opinion, the question's not, oh no, what do you do if somebody gets hurt? I think they'll probably be fine if they take like the normal amount of injuries, which is between zero and one at linebacker. The question is, are any of these guys good enough to replicate the production of last year? And I think that's an open question. I guess we're just going to have to find out.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see it on the field, right?
Yeah. Okay, the secondary. Like I said, I thought both from watching the film and also running the down distance situational analysis, the secondary really proved that was a very high quality group. They're losing quite a few pieces, but they're also bringing quite a few pieces back. They lose two of the safeties, Omar Brown and Phelan Sanford. Sanford, I think, was unrated out of high school. He went to JUCO. Both of those guys signed UDFA contracts. They also lose a cornerback, Quentin Newsome, who also signed a UDFA contract. They also lost a couple of depth guys, Taman Lynam and Ashton Houseman. And a couple of scholarship guys transferred out. Corey Collier, who was a highly rated Florida transfer, transferred out without seeing any playing time, I guess. And Javier Morton, who's a JUCO. So like seven departures here, which is a lot. Three of whom part of a pretty good defense.
Yeah, you had some I would not have remembered even. I mean, like a couple of those guys you mentioned, you're right, like just didn't see the field.
The three major contributors who return are the two cornerbacks, Malcolm Hartzog and Tommy Hill, another Arizona State transfer, and the safety, Isaac Guilford, who I think was the team's total overall leading tackler.
Yeah, he was.
They also return Deshaun Singleton, who was a starter, but he got hurt in week five against Michigan and missed the rest of the season, although he was on track to be like the leading tackler.
Yep.
It's just, you know, he got hurt. They also return Marcus Buford, who was interesting. He was a rotational player, but I thought a valuable rotational player. And it's sort of weird that he only played in four games. So I couldn't figure that one out, but I thought it was valuable. And then basically nobody else played. although I saw a whole bunch of dudes in the spring game, like, oh my God, did I see a bunch of dudes, including like eight walk-ons, because like so many dudes were out, like Gifford and Singleton were still out in the spring game. And then they brought in a transfer, Bly Hill, from the FCS ranks to play cornerback, who I don't know if he's related to Tommy Hill.
Don't think so, but it would be cool if our starting cornerbacks were Hill and Hill.
But then he got hurt during the game, and like they brought out the cart for him, like it was scary.
It looked bad, but the word on Hill is his injury was not as bad as Demetrius Bell's, and he's expected back for fall camp.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
God, it looked bad. Well, how do you think the cornerback rotation is going to work then?
So I think what they're talking about is having Malcolm Hartsog play safety.
Oh, really?
And so the talk, at least going into the spring game, was that Tommy Hill's one of your starting corners and Bly Hill was sort of the leading candidate to be the other starting corner. Hartsog can also go back and play corner as well, depending on whatever else is going on. And then hopefully Singleton's ready for fall camp. And then you have Isaac Gifford, who I love Gifford so much. He kind of, I don't know if you remember, it sounds like you've been doing this a long time. Gifford kind of reminds me of JoJo Doman,
who,
you know, was for that 2021 defense. It just always felt like Doman was in the right place, making a tackle in space, making a stop on third down, whatever it was. And Gifford reminds me a lot of JoJo Doman. So I think there's optimism here. I'll be honest with you. I'm looking at the scholarship distribution chart and there's 10 guys that are listed as true freshmen.
I mean, they took a ton of dudes in the 2024 cycle. I mean, I think something like that. Yeah, 10 guys is true freshmen. But then also in 2023, I think they took like 5 guys, Boodle, Stewart, Turner Barnes, and Safila.
Yeah. And I know they're really high on Jeremiah Charles, who's listed as a redshirt freshman as well. But I don't know. 16 guys.
Oh, no, I missed two. Yeah, for the corners. Yeah, they took 7 guys in 2023. So this, like, just like the offensive line and the wide receivers, like Matt Rhule shows up and he's like, I need a ton of dudes. And then he's like, I need a ton of dudes again in 2024.
Right, exactly. I don't know what to make of those, you know, 17 guys or whatever it is listed as true freshmen or redshirt freshmen. You know, hopefully some of them can contribute, but that's just a big group. And then I know, you know, Ethan Nation played a bit last year. I mean, some as like a punt returner, not always on defense, but I mean, hopefully he can be a contributor as well.
If they do move Hartsog from the cornerback room to the safety room so that it's Hill and Hill for the corners, who do you think that the third corner would be? Do you think it'd be Charles?
Yeah, I think it might be. I know they like Dwight Boodle quite a bit as well. And his older brother was a pretty good player.
I had him classified. I saw him playing nickelback. Do you think they move him over and play corner, like, you know, third corner?
They talk a lot about wanting guys to be able to play all over the secondary. But yeah, I think Boodle's a candidate to play corner as well.
It's big shoes to fill. Like I said, the secondary I thought was a big driver of their defensive success, which is frankly unusual in the Big 10. Most of the teams that I see that are defensive driven teams, it's because the line play is doing a great job and the secondary is sort of being made to look better than athletically they really are because of that. And Penn State was a great example. I'm so glad that I came off of doing the Penn State projects. They were an excellent example of that. And it was also really great to do Nebraska the next week because it was a counter example where I really thought the secondary was holding their own on their own. But losing Newsom, losing Omar Brown, losing Phelan Sanford, and then potentially losing Bly Hill, who was looking like a pretty good contributor in the spring game. I really hope that he's playing well. So it's like big shoes to fill in the secondary to hold the line. Such a great defensive performance last year, and it's going to necessarily be with some young guys, you know, because as we said, boy, did Rhule really stock up on young secondary players in the last two cycles. So I sort of think it's TBD for a couple of these things, but between Hartsog, both of the Hills, Gifford, cross your fingers that Hill and Singleton will be healthy. I think they'll have a good starting group, but then it's sort of like, what about the depth? Because they obviously didn't want to just play four or five guys last year.
Right.
You know, they wanted to play more than that. And so we're going to have, just like the wide receiver core, it's like, I think you sort of know who your starters are, but it's going to be like who your depth is that's going to be important here. And I don't think we're going to know that now. I think we're going to have to wait till September to find out.
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I think generally speaking, there's a lot of optimism about the defense because Rhule and Tony White were able to come in last year and flip the script on defense. And some of that was helped by the schedule, no doubt.
Sure.
But I think that there's more optimism this year because so many guys are coming back And then we did lose some pieces, but I think there's just a belief, maybe more so than the last few coaching staffs, that they can plug and figure, like they'll find another guy to do the job, right? At, you know, there'll be more. Last year, there were some pleasant surprises of guys who popped, and then it was like, oh, this guy's been on the roster for a few years and now he's really good. And so I think there's a hope that there can be a handful more of those guys to supplement what we already have, you know?
And then, like I said, the other big question on the defense for me is, are they going to be able to give the defensive tackles a break? You know, Huttmacher and Robinson, because it was it's very clear that fatigue sets in with those guys. They really, you know, weren't able to rotate as much as they should be able to. And that's another situation where, like, yeah, you know, Frost gave him a couple of good guys, but then it was nobody else. And the three, in my opinion, the three guys that they're going to have to plug in here, they're all 23 guys, aka Matt Rhule guys.
Yeah, well, another you're spot on. So one, I hope they can find some depth there to give those guys more of a rest. Two, and I'm blanking on who it was, one of our recent guests made the point, it's a little bit of a football cliche, but one of the best things you can do for a good defense is to be good on offense.
Yeah.
And so hopefully if they're better on offense, we can hold the ball for longer. We can so many times last year, we had backbreaking turnovers where the defense would get off the field and then we'd give it right back. And a lot of times, you know, we did that where the defense is backed up on the wrong side of the field or whatever it was. So hopefully some of that takes care of itself with better offensive play as well. And ideally you'd have both, right? You'd find some depth to help Huttmacher and Robinson, but also the offense can shoulder more of the burden this year as well.
Well, and they also got a quick coat in the ball in Crisco, man. Like, leading the country and putting the ball on the ground.
There's just some unbelievable. I mean, it goes back. That issue goes back to at least Pelini and maybe before that. But there's been some of the Husker Nebraska media has done some really interesting analysis of some of the turnover issues, and it is just mind-boggling.
TJ Burkle of Common Fan, go over to YouTube, find their podcast, Common Fan Podcast. Well, I'm excited to play Nebraska, even though we know it's going to be crazy close, just nutso stuff's going to happen. Someone's going to lose by 3 points because that's the only way it can go, it seems. Thanks so much for hopping on, TJ.
Yeah, absolutely. Excited to. I'll be there in Eugene in 2026, boys, so can't wait.
There you go. Absolutely. And thousands of your friends,
I'm sure,
will.
That's exactly right.
All right. And then Hithloday at Hithloday and over at Addicted to Quack. Wonderful talking to you as always. And TJ, we'll have you on the show some other time as well.
Yeah, sounds good. Looking forward to that. Great talking to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Go Ducks. Go Cornhuskers.